U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And this is John Williams in for Steve Bertrand. Steve's back next week. He was sending me pictures and videos last night from the interesting place and places that he's been. I'll let him tell you more about that. And he'll join me on my weekday show 1 to 3 next week. I'll be here till 3 o'clock this afternoon. And so on this final day, thanks for being part of the Wintrust Business Lunch and for letting me host the show and visit with people like Andrea Haines, who is an editor over at the Chicago Tribune and writes on the business tech scene. She joins Steve often enough, and she's here again. How are you?
Good. Good to see you.
Andrea, let's talk a little bit about the story that a lot of people have been paying attention to. I almost did a segment on this on my show in the afternoon, but just haven't gotten around to it yet, and that is the super-duper computer they're building, the Aurora, right?
Yes, the Aurora, which is a massive new computer that is in progress out at the Argonne National Laboratory.
They call it Aurora because it's near Aurora, or the Aurora, which has some other significance.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a pretty good cosmic word, right?
It does sound appropriate.
Yeah, it kind of encompasses all this, both location and the magic of hopefully what this thing will do. So this is a really big, you know, they were planning to build one that was a little bit less powerful than this, but there was a government mandate a couple of years ago to really accelerate this high performance computing. And so Argonne kind of ramped it up. And now this thing will be, at least for a minute, it will be the biggest computer in the world, the biggest supercomputer.
So it's a consortium, right? Cray and IBM and companies like that?
Exactly. And it has some really big goals, which include like really trying to find out what's happening in the stars, how to improve the power grid, like huge computing tasks that just, you know, we don't have necessarily the bandwidth to do on certain current systems.
Weather forecasting, I guess, would be better as a result.
That's a big one. Climate risk related things. And another intriguing one was creating medicines specifically for individuals, which I think is intriguing.
You know, maybe that begins to answer the question I had, because I knew when they said they're going to come out with a supercomputer that it would include climate forecasting, because evidently that requires a lot of data. But my attitude about that is we're pretty good at the weather right now, maybe not climate, but the weather. And how does a better computer better enable us to forecast the weather? You know, I don't exactly understand the connection there. Do you?
Yeah, I don't know if I do, but I think the data issue is definitely a big one. And there's some other interesting things coming online right now with bandwidth access and how climate is monitored, because it does bring in data from literally all over the world, right? There's climate sensors. There's all kinds of things that bring in weather data that have to be crunched and followed, and even finding the bandwidth to do that is a big issue.
I wonder then if it means that it's maybe existing programs. It's not so much figuring it out is literally having the capacity to figure it out.
Precisely.
They don't have the speed or the storage to actually utilize that number in a meaningful time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we've seen so much, you know, as we know, we talk about climate change, but even in the Midwest in recent weeks, there's been flooding and all kinds of things. So it's very top of mind.
You do think this is the new norm now, the sort of especially violent weather, or weather that just changes so rapidly. I've kind of get to ask people in Nebraska if they feel like climate is starting to affect weather more often and more dangerously, you know?
Yeah, the major weather events seem to be coming fast and furious.
The cost of this, and when is this computer up and running?
So this is supposed to be turned on in 2021, and it's a $500 million project.
That's amazing.
That's being funded by the Department of Energy.
Yeah, okay. Devin Nunes has been in the news this week, and I only bring that up to you because I know that involved Twitter, and that's technology. I see it as more political and legal conversation, but what are you hearing about this?
Yeah, so Devin Nunes, you know, we've seen a lot of parody accounts over the years, right? We had a great Mayor Emanuel one. We now have great ones involving the hats of our current mayoral candidates and other things that they do.
Forgot
so you're
about
right.
The Emanuel one. That was good.
This tech politics crossover definitely shows up a lot on social media. And in the parody account vein, there was a Devin Nunes's cow, which came up this week, and in which he's a California Republican. He decided to sue over it and accused the cow account and Twitter and some other users of Twitter of defamation.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a legal issue. Does he have standing, right?
You know, he's a public figure, and the bar is pretty high there. So I'm not sure if he thinks he can win this, or if it's more of a, like, don't come for me or I'll come for you type of move, like just trying to maybe warn off future critics that he's not going to take it without a fight.
Probably two ways to look at that. That's his signal, don't mess with me. Or it may be his way of getting his point across, right? Okay, I know I'm going to lose. I know I don't even have standing, but I want you to know that this is wrong, what these parody accounts are saying and doing. It almost cost me an election. He gets to say that today, and we're listening, not because he's upset, but because he's got a $250 million lawsuit against Twitter.
Yeah, it makes a ripple of news. And of course, the president is using Twitter in all kinds of ways all the time to do similar things, right? To put the edge on people. And it certainly keeps their name out there, because otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it right now, right?
Well, I follow Devin Nunes's cow now. I didn't before. I went to follow his mom because that was another one of those parody accounts, but that one was taken down a while ago. Stephen Colbert started Devin Nunes's skin as an account, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people are following that. He must have known that this would be the upshot, that in fact it would popularize something a lot of us didn't know anything about, and he would be the object of that. But again, I suppose that's not his concern. It was more what you were saying. If you mess with me, this is what you're going to get.
Yeah. And the cow, by the way, has 618,000 followers as of about half an hour ago. And that is as compared to his own actual official account, which has 398,000.
Well, there's
so
that.
Quite a bit more for the cow. We love our parodies.
From the Chicago Tribune, Andrea Haines. Andrea, you and Steve have another nice conversation soon, and thanks for visiting with us today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right.
1224 WGN, John in for Steve on the Wintrust Business Lunch. NCAA brackets, the 9 Oklahoma is whooping the 8 Mississippi, 46-27, 3 minutes left in the first half. 46-27, 3 left in the first half, Oklahoma up. They're at halftime, Iowa-Cincinnati. Cincinnati is beating Iowa 36-31. Cincinnati 36, Iowa 31. That's the 7 over the 10 right now. And then you've got Northern Kentucky against Texas Tech. Kansas State plays today. The Dukies play tonight. That'll be at 6:10 this evening over North Dakota State. Duke Center is back. I saw that today. He's 23 feet tall, and he's not even their best player. I expect the margin on that one will be around 70 or 80 points. But this is what we do this time of year, isn't it? On a phone line, by the way, there's Tom Gimbel. Hi, Tom. It's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good, John. Good to talk to you.
Tom is the CEO of LaSalle Network. You hear him with Steve here often enough, too. That's kind of what you're doing a little bit today, too, isn't it?
Yeah, we got a whole bunch. We got about 400, 500 people, clients and vendors coming through our office today to watch the games with us.
So you also then embrace the idea that this isn't a waste of time or money. This is actually good for morale and staffs.
Everybody's going to do it anyways, and it's no one's breaking the law, doing anything immoral. It's watching basketball at a time that connects people to one another and creates a fondness for our collegial days, and people get to engage with one another. It's no Twitter, no social media, just being with each other, looking people in the eye, and talking and hanging out. It's nice.
But there was that inevitable article earlier this week, and it said, here's how much money gets lost in lack of productivity. And it was $600 million. I forget what the number was, but it was something like that. It was a serious number. What do you make of that?
I think we need to have somebody write a model for how much money happy employees recontribute over the course of the other 50 weeks of the year.
Yeah, I've always wondered how they come up with that number anyway. That sounds to me relatively random, you know, like somebody had a formula and they plugged it in.
Well, the interesting thing is, John, I'm curious to get your take on it, but before social media and anybody could write an article or a column to get clicks, you didn't really read much about this. But now that anybody can get eyeballs and have a negative slant on things, they want to do that to get people excited and yelling and screaming and watching.
You know,
and it's crazy.
I think it is. So let's just stay with the positive here. So you like the idea. Is there any way that you recommend that staffs or offices play the NCAA brackets? That is, should it be from the top down, and should they have a thing, beat the boss or something like that? How do you suggest we play?
You know what? What we do a couple different things. So number one, for March Madness, we encourage everybody, whatever your business dress is, we have people wearing their college clothes. Wear a sweatshirt, wear a quarter zip, wear a t-shirt, wear a hat, whatever, right? So have fun with your dress, and people can do that, number one. We also tell people, even if your school's not in the tournament, you can wear that clothes. If you went to community college or high school, just wear it and have fun with it. That's number one. Number two, we do pools, and we let people gamble. It's not company-sponsored. It's employee-done, and we broadcast it, and people talk smack to one another, including me as the CEO, and that's fun. And then the other thing we do for when we entertain the clients is we have an employee-based chili cook-off. So we've got 25 people that made homemade chili and brought it in for a contest for that to feed everybody and make it fun. So we really try to just make it a collegial atmosphere.
You know, one of my followers on Twitter said she's in a pool and the idea is to do the worst, you know, so whoever has the fewest points. And I said to her, I'm not sure that being able to guess the most losers is any easier than guessing the most winners of games. In fact, I think it's the very same in the first round anyway.
And I think you're 100% right.
But that would still be a fun pool. I mean, so if you say, oh, I always get them wrong, then fine. Go for it. Here's my suggestion. Next year, have a winner's pool and a loser's pool. Out of the gate, if you want to play it that way, go ahead and play it that way.
I think you're onto something. I think you patent it and get this over to, not to give you a competing network a plug, get it over to ESPN. I think you can make something happen here, John.
Well, that's what you guys do. It's nice to talk to you, Tom. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, David. John Williams in for Steve Bertrand. I'll be on till 3 today, and then next week back to my 1 to 3 spot. Steve will be back with you next week on Monday. Steve is not here this week because he's a Marquette fan and he can't get out from under the covers after they got blasted in the NC2A's tournament. Oh my gosh. Marquette's actually not a bad basketball team, I'll never say in front of Steve, but doggone it, they sure did not show up for the tournament. And they were good in the Big East this year. The Big East is not doing that well. Just a couple of updates for you on scores at the half. It's Oklahoma 50, Mississippi 33. That's at the half. And they've been back underway for a while now, Iowa-Cincinnati. And on that one, Cincinnati, the 7 seed is up over Iowa, the 10 seed, 47-42 with 12:41 left in the second half. Still to come, you've got the UC Irvine game against Kansas State, Colgate in Tennessee, Virginia, and Gardner-Webb. A lot of folks will watch Virginia and Gardner-Webb today just to see if there's any chance that Virginia can tank again as a 1 seed. No one had ever done it before last year, and they did, of course. So we'll keep you posted on some of those scores throughout the afternoon. Of course, you're just as interested in your taxes right now. Toby Stanger is a senior editor at Consumer Reports and joins us on WGN. Hi, Toby. It's John Williams. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Really good. I was very surprised to see something from your reporting, and that is that nearly 4 out of every 10 people who will file income taxes will do their own taxes, I presume using software these days, right?
Yes, that's right.
4 out of 10. 4 out of 10. I don't know. What's the takeaway from that? Does that number sound high or low to you? Put that in some perspective for me.
It's been that way for many years. So that still means that 6 out of 10 people are still taking their taxes to a professional. But that's, you know, it's a lot of people doing their own taxes. And in some cases, it may be just fine. You know, you've got a very simple situation, and the tax software can handle it. The problem we had at Consumer Reports is that we found issues with a number of tax prep programs that we looked at online, and so we just want to warn people about some of the things they need to look out for.
Well, I would assume that every single, if I was using the H&R Block one, or if I was using TaxAct or TaxSlayer, TurboTax, that I would get the same result with all of them, no?
Yes, they guarantee that the calculations will be accurate, and we didn't actually test that, but we did look at what happens when you go through their guided programs and answer their questions, and, you know, are they leading you in an intuitive way? Are they giving you up-to-date information, especially this season with everything that's changed with the tax law? And we found some issues with some of these programs, yeah.
For instance?
Well, one thing that was troubling was there is a new tax credit for people who have an adult dependent, and the part of the software which determines whether that person can actually be claimed as a dependent, you know, requires a number of steps. You have to answer a number of questions. And this year, there is a new tax credit of up to $500 if this adult who's living with you, or they don't necessarily have to live with you, but they can qualify. You can qualify for up to $500 credit if this person qualifies. But the way that the tax software or the way that the tax services lead you through the process doesn't always end up with you're getting the right answer. That's what I found when I did this.
Well, I guess it really is about then the questions they ask and the order in which they ask them. What are they driving at here? And if it's not clear as I'm filling out this form, I don't know what they're doing, right? It's their software. Then maybe I'll actually input information that doesn't get me the best result.
Yes, or you'll just go in a direction that doesn't lead you to enough information to really answer the question that you need answered.
Yeah. Well, is it set up like trees, and if I take the wrong branch, I might not ever get to that area that might actually be beneficial to me?
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it. We also, by the way, asked that they all have human help. Some of them you have to pay a little extra for. Somebody that you can either chat with or talk on the telephone with or email them a question, and the answers were not always completely accurate.
Do you all recommend
the questions that we asked?
Yeah, understood.
Sorry?
So, in other words, when I get to the human help isn't always necessarily correct. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, it wasn't nuanced. We asked a couple questions that we thought would, you know, had some nuance because we wanted to see how these people did, and we weren't that impressed, quite frankly.
Do you rank the programs, the various software packages? What's best? What's worst? What's the best value?
We didn't this year. We did say that, you know, if you people are going to use the we didn't recommend any of them with, you know, wholeheartedly. But we did say, for example, if you have a fairly simple return, you can where you've not got, say, a home business or something like that, you probably can use H&R Block or TurboTax fairly, you know, and expect a fairly decent result. Some of the others had a couple more problems. We also offer in consumerreports.org a list of steps that you should take when you use these tax programs to make sure that you're more likely to get the right answer. For example, they all have import functions, so you can import your W-2. Well, we recommend you take advantage of that if you can, because it's more likely that the information will upload and you won't have input errors, but you also should check it to make sure it's accurate.
If I import that's funny, because I was just going through my tax papers this week, but I'm looking at things I got in the mail, pieces of paper. Do I get a digital file of that from my employer and insert it, or how do I do that?
You may be able to, you may not be able to. A lot of them allow you to insert items like that and 1099 forms and so forth through, if you have them as a PDF, you can drag and drop. If you don't have it or you really just want to manually do it, we recommend you sit with somebody you trust and have one person read off the paper and have the other person key it in so that there's less likelihood of transposing a number or a letter and getting things wrong. A number.
One last thing. Yeah. If, say, when I then hit OK, go, and it gives me my return or how much I still owe, and I don't like that number, do they all enable me to go back and increase my deductions or something else?
Well, generally,
why are you laughing?
No, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But there is nothing to stop you from trying more than one program. And you may like one program better than another. One place, we didn't really this year look at it, but they do, if you are one of those people who's still itemizing, and there aren't that many, and say you have charitable deductions of donated items, they sometimes will give you a slightly different value for those donated items, and that could make a small difference for you. But frankly, very few people are itemizing anymore with the new tax law. Most people, about 90%, are going to take the standard deduction, and it doesn't matter what they donated to charity.
That's going to be a real eye-opener, or is this season, isn't it, for people?
Yes, and in fact, the IRS just did an interesting thing today. People were being penalized because they hadn't withheld enough in 2018 and were noticing that they were paying a lot more tax than they expected, and in some cases paying an extra penalty. And just today, the IRS loosened the rules a little bit so that not as many people will be penalized. So if you've already done your taxes, you might want to go through the software again to see if maybe if you paid a penalty, maybe you don't owe as big a penalty anymore. This is a brand new thing that just came out today.
The big tax break isn't as big a tax break as folks had anticipated, since you don't have some of the deductions or there's caps on them where there were not before.
Well, right, but then a lot of other things changed that it was supposed to even that out. For example, people are getting a much higher standard deduction than they used to, nearly double.
Yeah.
And the tax rates themselves were improved for people. So, and also if you had the alternative minimum tax, which is something that affects a lot of the people in the Northeast where we are, that was eliminated for almost everyone. So there was supposed to be an evening out. The problem is that with the new rules in place, a lot of the money that people got was they got in their paychecks over the course of the year, and so they're not getting as big a refund because of the withholding. The withholding change. So they may think that the IRS is ripping them off. In fact, the IRS gave them the money in the paychecks
all along,
and they're just not getting as big a refund now.
Toby Stenger is a senior editor at Consumer Reports, consumerreports.org. Very interesting, Toby. Thanks for your help.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. It's 1248 on WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day.
And they're off. The cranes are coming around the bend. All of the tools are in place, and the workers are on their way in.
The O'Hare expansion project has begun. O'Hare is one of the most traveled airports in the country, so keeping it up to date is important, and the international terminal is the one getting the focus right now, with an $8.7 billion project. By 2021, the terminal will get 10 new gates, 15 new spaces for retail and restaurant, and airlines will have a lot more flexibility. And let's hope that within this multi-year project, it allows a little bit more relief for those stressed-out travelers. That's me. And speaking of less stress, Metra is trying to buy 200 more train cars to allow more runs on their lines. They're making a big push for cycling out a number of old cars that are nearly 60 years old. I mean, that's a pretty good lifespan. Seems like they're built for reliability, but the technology and upgrades that come over time provide more efficiency and an overall better experience for passengers. I'm Bennett Wake Knight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Joe Bruswellis joins us. Pardon me, Joe. He is the J.D. Foster U.S. Chamber of Commerce chief economist. We had talked about it off the air. I shouldn't have on the air. Joe, how are you today?
Very good. Thank you.
Talk to us a little bit about what's going on with the Midwest economy. This is something that you folks write about in a large sense, but also you've been looking at what's happening in the Midwest as well, correct?
Right. So, you know, the Midwest right now is facing a very difficult challenge. The trade tensions that are hitting the agricultural sector and the slowdown in demand for manufacturing products is going to be the defining narrative, I think, this year in the economic growth in that region. You know, I'm really concerned right now about what's going to happen in the agricultural sector if the tariffs on China aren't rolled back. I think that if we don't get this deal done very quickly, you're likely to see a bankruptcy soar all across the upper Mississippi Valley. We got some really difficult data this morning from the global manufacturing sector, and that did not bode well for what's going on in terms of the ongoing evolution of the auto industry in and around the upper Midwest.
You say if we don't get this deal done, if we do get some deal done with China, will that prevent these things that you're describing?
Well, there's going to have to be two things that are going to happen. First, they're going to have to turn around the soy purchases very, very quickly. They're sitting on barges up and down the Mississippi and rail cars all up the upper Midwestern portion of the country. Second, there's likely to have to be a new round of tariff mitigation to bridge the gap until the new crops can be planted and the increased purchases that are expected to be part of the agreement are actually consummated.
Is this inevitable? I mean, I wonder if there is an option that would have kept all of this from happening. I think a lot of people think that we do need to play hardball with China, and this is an inevitable consequence of that.
Well, I would disagree with that. That this was an unnecessary trade conflict. Moreover, the way to pressure the Chinese is not through bilateral interaction. It's through concerted multilateral pressure. Even when you go there, I did a five-city speaking tour in China last year. They will tell you that we want to do this, but it can't be the U.S. versus China. Moreover, we did have a vehicle to do this. It was called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Unfortunately, Mr. Trump abrogated that in the early days of his administration. And I think looking back, that's going to be considered probably the largest strategic blunder by the administration.
It's funny, though, because it seems in the Prairie States and throughout the Midwest, the president still enjoys support. How do you reconcile the support farmers still have with the president with these policies?
Well, I think the support for Mr. Trump in that area of the country is more about cultural issues than it is economic issues. And should the trade tensions not be rolled back, and we're growing more concerned about that given the statements out of the White House, we'll see whether that support deteriorates as those bankruptcies soar and the economy slows to less than 1% growth in the current quarter.
Joe Brusualis is the RSM Chief Economist and J.D. Foster, U.S. Chamber of Commerce Chief Economist. Sobering stuff, Joe. I appreciate your time. Thanks for giving us a quick look at that.